Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is kind of a non-topic. I called it Coach on Call, which actually used to be the name of Cheryl Richardson's show, but really just an opportunity for you and I to speak. So today's show is about whatever you would like it to be about. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside of the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And I think my only place setting for today is I just wanted to, and I don't know, maybe everybody's doing this, but it feels weird doing a Hay House radio show today without talking about Louise Hay. I knew that her time to pass was coming. So it wasn't a complete shock. And yet it always is a little bit of a shock. So many people have been just touched by Louise's presence in the world. And it always struck me as extraordinary how late in life she came to this, that this was really all something that's been created from when she was in her 60s. You know, most people think in terms of, yeah, I'll be done by the time I'm in my 60s, not, oh, I'm going to start a movement that's going to spread hope and positivity and love throughout the universe when I get there. Most people also think of getting an illness like cancer or HIV or, you know, as the beginning of the end, not a new beginning. And so I just wanted to share. I shared on Facebook. You can read it on facebook.com/MNeil, but my first meeting with Louise. So in the 1980s, I worked in a New Age bookshop. I was going to drama school in London, and my little spare money job was to work in a New Age bookshop called The Mystic Trader in Chalk Farm in London. And it was owned by Stuart Wilde, who was, in fact, later in life, a Hay House author, but was unlike anyone I had ever come across. And I was very new to this whole world. I'd read Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain. Was the first book I'd ever read that could be categorized as in any way alternative or new age. And sort of through her, I came across Heal Your Body and You Can Heal Your Life. And which I think I actually just am realizing I wrote it wrong. I wrote it as Heal Your Life, but it was Heal Your Body. I'm pretty sure the little blue book. And I just was introduced to this whole new world. And it was a world that fascinated me, coming from a very scientific, very left brain family and upbringing. It was all completely new to me. And then I remember when the time came, when Stuart sold the bookshop, he wound up selling it to David Lawson and Justin Carson, who were healers that had been trained by Louise. And so Hay House was always just something that was in my awareness. Now, fast forward 20 years, and I write my first book, which was going to be called Soul Path. And we had interest from four or five publishers, and one of them was Hay House. And I immediately, as soon as my agent told me Hay House were interested, they would have had to have made a really bad offer for me not to have gone with them, because I don't know, they were so much a part of my own journey in this world. And a lovely meeting with Reed, who is the head of the company part of Hay House. You know, Louise was always the visionary, and just being very excited and very excited, because one of the things he said, look, we don't really invest in books. We invest in authors. That's a Louise thing. You know, she cares about the people. More than the particular book that they've written. And so she wants people who have something to say. And I like that. And I mean, this is why I'm still writing books with Hay House. You know, I'll have my sixth Hay House book coming out in January, Creating the Impossible. So I hadn't met Louise yet, though. So a little while later, it was her 80th birthday. And we were invited down to her 80th birthday, and my wife and I went down, and I don't know if I thought there'd be like a formal greeting line or something, but it was just a huge party. There were like 150 people there. It felt like there were 150 people there. And I kind of, at one point I saw that Louise was on her own at a table, and I thought, okay, I gotta go for it. Right. I gotta jump in. And I grabbed Nina's hand, my wife, and we went over and I introduced myself. And I said, hi, Louise, you don't know me. My name's Michael Neal. This is my wife, Nina. I'm one of your newest authors. You know, I used to work with Stuart Wilde. And her eyes lit up. And she spent the next 10 minutes just regaling me with stories about Stuart and adventures that they'd had and fun things that they'd done. And I just, somewhere in my mind, I was thinking, holy crap, you're 80. Like, you're cooler than most people I know my age. And I had the chance to probably, we probably would see her two or three times a year. And just every time the life in her, the aliveness in her was so pronounced, and not just an aliveness, but a sense of fun, a twinkle. And that's what I will always remember about Louise, is the life and the twinkle. And anytime I start thinking, oh, I'm, you know, this is my last chance, I'm getting too old for this, I think I'm 30 years younger than she was when I met her. So I think there's hope for most of us. So again, today is about whatever you want to talk about. And that can be about Louise, or that can be about your life. So the numbers to call again, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And let's begin in Tucson with Keita. Keita, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. This is my second time calling. I'm always a little emotional when I talk to you because I'm just in such a state of gratitude for everything that you have just brought to me in my life through your writings and through your show. I mean, you've literally changed my life so much. And I called you a couple weeks ago because I was going through the interview process out here in Tucson. My husband's getting a PhD.
Yeah.
And when you go through that process, you know, it's a fixed income. So I'm out shuffling and going through interviews. And it was funny because when I had called you, I was going into that one interview and you said to be really spontaneous in the moment about the pay amount. Well, that did not end up working out at all because they were unwilling to move that pace. That wasn't something that was going to work out for me. And I crashed. I had a day where I literally was just overcome. Again, I was in my thoughts. I was believing that my thoughts were real. Even though I know your work, I was still there and I was okay with it. I gave myself a day to feel bad about it. And then I came back to Michael and Louise Hayworld, and I was like, okay, he talks about being authentic, being your authentic self, and being in that flow. And you told me that day that you are not, I can't remember the order, a square peg in a hole or something like that. And I just kept remembering that, okay, Keita, the right opportunity is going to find you. You just have to keep going. And this amazing, amazing job opened up for me, and tons of little opportunities have come out of it. And I just really, really, really want to thank you. And anyone that listens to you or Louise Hay or any of these authors, it's funny because Shakti Gwain, the Creative Visualization book, was my first book too, also kind of into this world. And then the second one was Deepak Chopra, The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. Mm-hmm. I actually ended up moving to San Diego because after an accident I was in, I was like, no, the book can't be over. And it said that he resided in San Diego. And I was like, that's where I'm moving. And I sold everything and moved to San Diego and was there for 24 years. Now in Tucson. But I just really, really, really want to thank you and honor Louise for everything that she did and how much I know she has impacted so many people's lives, and for myself, after the horseback riding that I was in, where I fractured my neck in three places and my right side was paralyzed and I had to learn to walk again. I would cling to your shows, the books, and the methodologies that her legacy now provides for all of us. And it's just, my heart is just so overcome with sadness, but I'm also overcome with joy every time I see butterflies. I'm out in my yard right now watering, and every time I see a butterfly come, I'm thinking, you know, what's so neat is she can connect with so many people in so many different ways. But I wanted to call and thank her, and I wanted to call and just thank you so authentically and so sincerely for your work and what you do and how you truly, truly can transform each one of our lives. Just the methodology of knowing, okay, this is just a thought. Depression is just a thought. Failure, not being wanted, thinking that someone doesn't want to hire you or you're not worthy. Anybody listening, just know these are thoughts. Just like he says, fresh thought will find you. I go and I'll walk in the canyon, or I'll go to a yoga class, or I'll read one of your books, or I'll listen to one of your CDs, and that new fresh thought, sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it'll take a couple hours to come in, and sometimes it's instantaneous. And so I just really, really, really want to thank you so much. I'm putting more of my energy also into my little Key to Fit YouTube channel to bring people there. And I talk about you all the time on my channel.
Thank you,
Keita. I think you're just an amazing, amazing, amazing person with such amazing gifts. So that's my call is really just a praise.
Okay. Well, I'm thrilled to hear it. I'm very appreciative of it. And I'll look forward to hearing from you again.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. It's funny. There's a couple of things that occurred to me off of that. I think the thing that jumped out at me was when she said, sometimes it takes a little time. It might take a couple hours. And I had to laugh. Some of you know the story, but I studied with a Tibetan monk, and I'd seen this video. I think you can find it on YouTube still, of Ken Wilber, the spiritual philosopher, going into a deep state of meditation. Where his brain waves were completely asleep. So he had delta brain waves. I think it's beta, alpha, theta, delta, something like that. But so the deepest state of what would essentially be unconsciousness, but he was awake and able to communicate from that place. And it was all measured on brain machines. And I remember saying to this guy, who's a meditation teacher, kind of saying that, well, that was kind of one of my meditation goals, was to get to that place where I could function, you know, at that level of consciousness. And he was very encouraging. He said, Michael, one of these lifetimes, I am sure you will be able to do that. And I had to kind of stop and wait. Did he just say one of these lifetimes? Because I'd been thinking in terms of like, how many months will this take? And he was thinking in terms of lifetimes. And I think it is, there is something about that, you know, we think in terms of hours as being a long time. And I think our perspective on time is maybe a little bit skewed. Things do work a certain way. Rivers flow, thoughts flow. There will always be fresh thought. There is fresh thought now. It may take a couple seconds or minutes or hours or days or weeks or months or lifetimes, but it usually doesn't take a couple lifetimes. Usually it is as simple as you get distracted, you go for a walk, you flick the TV on, you go do something else, and then new thought is right there waiting for you. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of the system. That's the kindness, to my mind, of the design. Let's go to Vancouver. Again, the show is yours today. So numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. And we're going to go to Vancouver and talk to Angela. Angela, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for saying a few words about Louise, what a marvelous woman. And my sense is the life and the twinkle that you experienced with her, that you've somehow caught that yourself. I've heard that enthusiasm is caught, not taught. And anyway, at least it's my impression of you and listening to you. And I'm enrolled in the obstacle course.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just want to say that the suggestion after the information video was just oh my gosh, it just knocked me right into a whole other ballpark in terms of my thinking. And I really love Trasketball. Yes. So, just getting some great results from that. And what I noticed that I want to ask you about in terms of a coaching question, I've been coaching for a few years, and so there's this idea of creating clients. And I noticed that, like, I have conversations with people, and I forget that when I make a connection with someone, that this could potentially be someone that I could coach in a positive and inspirational way. And so we'll get to the end of the call, and I'll hang up, and it'll be like half an hour later, I'll go, oh, my goodness, I really connected with that person. How come it didn't occur to me to kind of move the conversation in a, you know, would you be interested in a coaching conversation, or how could I help you maybe realize that goal that you just talked about or whatnot? So do you have any thoughts on how maybe I can, I mean, other than simply slow down, but any other perspective on how I can be more aware of just general conversations and kind of be more present to put me in a better space to create clients?
Well, there's a few things that occur, and the two main ones are one you've said, which is, yeah, slow down. But slow down doesn't just mean slowing down on the inside so that you're more present, so that things occur to you in the moment and not later. That's part of slowing down. The other thing is slow down. Like, it takes 9 months to make a baby. For a human baby, I think it takes different for different species. You know, it takes about, I think, 6 months for a new lawn to grow in. It takes about 50 to 70 years for a tree to grow to its sort of young adult maturity height and size. And I think it's okay if creating clients takes more than one phone call. One of the most useful things that somebody ever said to me, and it wasn't specifically about creating clients, it was actually someone who had reached out to me to be involved with some interview series that they were doing. And I, you know, I'm appreciative of the fact that I get asked that kind of thing all the time, but I get asked that kind of thing all the time. So I generally speaking kind of put people off because I don't have time to speak to everyone who'd like to speak. But, you know, he was persistent without being annoying. And a couple of years after he'd first reached out to me, I started to see him everywhere online. I started to read a bit about him, and I started to kind of go, oh, this is an interesting guy. Actually, I quite like to talk to him. And I reached out to him quite apologetically, saying, hey, you know, I recognize I've been putting you off for a couple of years. But actually, I'd quite like to speak to you if you're still interested. And he wrote back, oh my God, I'd love it. And when we actually got on the phone together for the first time, I again sort of sheepishly apologized. And he said, genuinely, he said, when I meet somebody, I expect that they're going to be in my life forever. So whether it takes one phone call or a couple of years, it doesn't matter. It's in the context of our lifetime together. And I got he meant it, but I also got, my God, I have about a 1 to 3 phone call time frame. You know, if it doesn't happen in this time, it's not going to happen. And I know from having now been a coach for 27 years, it's quite typical that by the time somebody signs up with me as a client, they've been in my world in one way or another for a couple of years at least. Right. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't also meet people and we have a call and we go, great, let's work together. That happens too sometimes. But that's more the exception than the rule.
Gotcha. So I wonder if that's even a parallel with your previous conversation about, you know, you'll in a couple of lifetimes, you'll get to that state. Like you were thinking it in terms of months and yeah. So
yeah, people will say, you know, when we work with our students on Supercoach Academy about enrollment, you know, they'll sometimes say, oh, I blew it. And, you know, go, well, what do you mean? And they go, well, the call didn't go well. And in my mind, I'm like, well, which call? You know, you know, which of the 2 years worth of calls that you're going to wind up having with them didn't go well. You know, what's the big deal? But of course, when we think I have one shot at this, like this is a relationship where people are going to invest money and time, and you're going to invest time to make their life better.
Right.
I would no more expect that to happen in one phone call than I would expect to, you know, meet the future mother of my children if I didn't already have a mother of my children in on one date.
Right.
It's not impossible, but it's not how it usually works.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And when that does happen, which has happened for me, not very often, it's been exactly that. It's been more of an exception. So I can exhale for as long as I need to.
Nice.
And work on building the relationship and get a different sense of a timeline around. Yeah, and as you say, it's the money investment, it's the time investment on both sides. And it's also the transformation investment. Like I noticed that just in terms of building trust, like that, that's kind of a curve to build the trust that people have so that they can really open themselves in a vulnerable way, which is always part of a coaching transformation. So all those things make sense. Thank you so much for your time today, Michael.
A pleasure, Angela. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
So Angela mentioned the obstacle course. I'll mention the obstacle course. We have a few self-study programs now available. One is the newest program is called the Obstacle Course to Success. And you can find it at michaelneal.org/obstacle. And it's just a really fun exploration of success and all the things that we think are stopping us from having it and how we kind of can get a deeper understanding of them and move past them. And if you do want to join, I really encourage you to sign up before, I think it's September 11th. I'll be doing a live week of calls exclusively for people who are enrolled in the program. And that will be included in the program. And then after that, the recordings of those calls will be part of the program. But you can find out more about that at michaelneal.org/obstacle. Let us go from Canada to Switzerland, and let's speak to Barbara. Barbara, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, Michael. It's my first time calling.
Well, welcome.
So I finally got through. So my question, I hope I can put it together. It's something like I heard you say, if we know when we want something and we also know when we don't want something. And at other times, I think I heard you talk with George Pransky about that every human being actually is capable to be inspired to do anything they want or also to love anything. And it's not that a wise decision to have preferences. So somehow these two things, I can't put them together.
Well, so let me try to speak to what I think is behind both of them. That might make sense of it. And if not, then you'll tell me and we'll go somewhere else with it. So one of those statements or one of those notions, one of those understandings is that our natural inclination is universal joy and appreciation. Like we are made to love anything until proven otherwise, right? So little kids will get as much pleasure from dirt as they will from food, and they will get as much pleasure from a box as they will from the toy inside the box, right? And then we gradually learn preferences. We learn, I like this, I don't like this, I like this, I don't like this. But we learn them as if they're permanent. So we have a bad experience with something and we go, I don't like that. And then we stop looking in that direction. We have a good experience with something and we think, I like that. And we stop experiencing it fresh anymore. We now experience it inside the box of something I don't like or inside the box of something I like. And we do it with people too, right? Once we've decided if we like someone or not, now everything they do is through the filter of someone I don't like doing it versus someone I do like doing it. So the reason why, as I understand it, and George particularly, this is particularly true for him, talks about kind of not really having preferences, but not encouraging them in himself, not playing to his preferences, is simply because it's a very short trip from a preference to a need. From, yeah, I prefer pasta over chicken, to, oh my God, I can't believe they're going to make me eat the chicken. I can't believe they don't have pasta. This is terrible. It's not in and of itself there's any problem with preferring pasta to chicken. It's just, it can quickly start to make life seem unfair and like you have to have what you want in order to be okay. And it's a slippery slope. So that's what's sort of behind that. Does that part make sense?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Now the other part that we have knowings about things, we have sincere desires, we have inclinations, we're drawn to certain things. Well, that is just part of this unfolding curiosity inside ourselves for life. And I don't know why some people are drawn to the guitar and other people are drawn to the saxophone and other people aren't drawn to music at all. Some people are drawn to basketball. Some people are drawn to soccer. Some people aren't drawn to sport at all. Some people are drawn to art. Some people are in other words, I don't really know what's behind that, but I recognize that it's so. And there's something beautiful and fun about following your inclinations and seeing where it takes you. The reason for me those two things aren't contradictory is I can follow my inclination, but if it doesn't go anywhere, it's okay. I can follow my inclination, but if I can't for some reason for a time, my life's not over. I was talking to somebody this morning, and I think we've just lost Barbara, but I'll kind of carry on. So she can maybe listen on the replay. But, you know, I was talking to somebody this morning and they had to make a life or death decision for, his wife's mother. And his wife's mother, she was a feisty 90 plus year old. And, she got sick and she got very sick one day and they took her into the hospital thinking she just had like a stomach bug. And she had something much more serious. And the doctor said, look, we can either do an operation, which will probably won't work and will almost certainly leave her crippled, or we cannot do the operation and she'll be dead by morning. And you know, they talked with her mom, and her mom was very clear she didn't want the operation. She was done, and they made the decision, and she died in the morning. And afterwards he was talking to the doctor about, why do some people decide to live and some people decide to let go? And the doctor said, there's a lot of things behind it. He said, it depends really on what somebody's life is about and where they're at. And some people are just really engaged with life for its own sake. And whether they would be living it in a wheelchair or living it on their two feet doesn't really matter to them. And other people are only living for being able to do certain things. And if they can't do those things anymore, they kind of lose the will to live. And essentially, it's possible, as I've seen it, to live a rich, full life following your inclinations, but without being hijacked by your preferences. Following that inner flow of wanting, of desire, of just authentic, like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, wouldn't it be cool to try that? Wouldn't it be cool to do this? Without going that next step to, and if I can't, I'm going to be miserable. And if it doesn't work out, I'm going to regret it. And if it doesn't all happen the way that I want it to happen, it wasn't worthwhile. I remember having a woman on one of my courses. It might've even been one of the early Supercoach Academies. And I watched her do some coaching work, and I thought she was very good. And I took her to one side and I said, you know, she was brand new to it. I said, look, I've got to tell you, I've watched a lot of coaches over the years, a lot of people training to be coaches, and you've got something. If you stick with this within 18 months to 2 years, I think you're going to be up and running and really be an impactful coach. And she looked at me horrified. And she said, 18 months to 2 years, I may as well get a job at the supermarket. And I was so taken aback. And I said to her, yeah, okay, I guess maybe go do that. Because, of course, for her, in her mind, it was a means to an end. I want to do this so that I can do that. I want to do this so that I can do that. And if it doesn't let me do that, I don't want to do it. For me, it's a passion. It's what I love doing. It's what I would do anyways if it wasn't a job description. Funnily enough, I had a meeting with somebody yesterday, and we were talking about possibly doing a program together as a, you know, very successful person in their own field. And, you know, I suggested to him that we could do something together. And he went, well, it sounds like a lot of work. What would be the payoff? And I just went, I don't know. It might be a big payoff. There might not be any payoff at all. And he said, well, I don't have time for projects like that. And I just thought that was interesting. That's totally legitimate. I don't have a problem with that. But by the same token, my gosh, it doesn't look like that to me. Like, any excuse to get together with interesting people and create cool stuff, I'm in. We'll figure the money out. We'll figure out how to make it work. So it's just a different way of being with the world, where our engagement with the world becomes its own reward instead of what we do only being worthwhile if the world decides to reward it. So sorry that I don't know what happened with Barbara. She fell off, but hopefully that will have been useful for her. And we will now go from Switzerland to Georgia. Just before we do, again, you want to get in. It's your show today. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S. and Canada, 760-001-760-918-4300. Let's go to Georgia and let's talk to, Tamika. How'd I do, Tamika?
That's good.
All right. Well, welcome. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, Michael, I'm going through a divorce right now.
Okay.
And it's more, if it were just the splitting up of a family, I even think I could handle that. This is actually my second marriage, so it's my second divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, things have broken down to such a point where he won't speak to me. He's alleged to court that he's afraid of me. I mean, it is a real, like, cut off.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not able to discuss even breaking up. I brought two children into the marriage, and he brought a son into the marriage. And we were struggling a lot at the end, and it was very unpleasant. But I felt like we could have gotten to a better place, and that's no longer an option. So I guess my question is, I'm really trying to keep this feeling I have about life that it is good, but in the midst of this, it's really hard to feel that way about life and to let him make his decision and honor that and to just go with this proceeding, this process, without fighting it. So how do you do that?
Well, let me ask you a question. What do you mean when you say life is good?
I think I've always looked at life very childlike still, just that things work out and you have your ups and you have your downs, but for the most part, it's a great ride. It's a wonderful experience. And this kind of has me doubting that just a little or a lot.
So here's how it looks a little bit different to me than that. And I'm going to just share it and then we'll talk about it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think life is life. I don't think it is good. I don't think it is bad. I think it is life. It is an unfolding. I think it's a contact sport. That's actually something Sid Banks used to say, that you know, you nobody gets through without their bumps and bruises. Our experience of life is an experience of love and thought. It's an experience of the love that is inherent in life itself and all the things that we think. And so when we're thinking a lot of miserable things, we have a lot of miserable feelings. When we're thinking a lot of wonderful things, we have a lot of wonderful feelings. And when we're not thinking that much at all, we feel the love that's underneath it all. So in a way, it's true to say life is good because it's made of love. But if it gets translated to good things happen to good people, everything turns out in the end, well, we all know that actually that's not really necessarily true. So circumstantially, some people have it harder than others. That has always been true. As best I can tell, that will always be true. But the people who circumstantially have it harder don't necessarily have worse lives. Sometimes they have the best lives because they've seen that their well-being is never going to come from their circumstances. So they've learned to go direct to the source. And whether they've done that through religion and a relationship with God, or whether they've done that through spirituality and a relationship with a deeper, higher self, or whether they do that just kind of intuitively through connecting with other people and spending time in nature, or however they do that, they found the moment-to-moment love and joy and connection that is possible regardless of how things happen to be going in their world. And I've always found that in my work, because I've worked with people across the spectrum, that some of the wealthiest people I work with and some of the poorest people I work with get the inside out understanding the quickest. Because at both extremes, they've realized that circumstances aren't going to do it for them. And it's those of us who kind of live in the middle, where a bunch of our circumstances are good and some of our circumstances aren't so good, that we can still convince ourselves that if we only had better circumstances, life would be good. Now, what do you hear in that? What resonates or doesn't resonate in that for you?
Well, something that I've heard before, that nothing is really inherently good or inherently bad. And it's not so much circumstances that create the experience. I create the experience. So I can be going through this divorce, which I mean, through what the world has told me and what I believe, this is a terrible experience. So, but I could just sort of live moment to moment, day to day, and take what comes and make the best of it.
Well, and yeah, wouldn't it be kind of neat to be the freak who managed to enjoy her messy divorce?
That would be awesome.
You know, that would be my goal for you.
I'm gonna try that.
And I just, the other thing that came to mind is an old Winston Churchill quote, which, if you're going through hell, keep going.
Okay.
Well, all right, Tamika, thank you for phoning.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. It's so counterintuitive, right? We are so culturally conditioned to always try to get the circumstances right as a means to an end, as a way to get ourselves right. And the whole nature of the inside-out understanding is that it works 180 degrees opposite to that. When we're right with ourselves, we can do really well in the world. Doesn't mean things will always go our way by any stretch of the imagination, but when they do, we can really celebrate it, and when they don't, we can enjoy that too. And when we're out of whack with ourselves, it doesn't matter how good our circumstances are. You know, there are so many stories like this, but just one I particularly remember was of a guy I knew who was named Man of the Year. I can't remember if it was Time Magazine or Life Magazine or one of those magazines that was used to do Man of the Year. And, you know, he told me that the night he won Man of the Year, and he went back to his apartment and had a fancy apartment somewhere, you know, with a doorman, and the doorman, "Oh, congratulations, sir." And he said that night he was on his balcony thinking about jumping. Circumstances are no guarantee of anything. In fact, the only thing we can guarantee about circumstances is they'll change. Right? This too will pass. For better, for worse, for better, for worse, for better, for worse. Like, I've become, the longer I've been married, the more I've believed in the marriage vows. That the bond, the pledge, the commitment is to love and let yourself be loved in sickness and in health. Not only when times are hard and not only when times are good, for richer and for poorer. I bet there's more than that. That's like, oh, I'm remembering, I got married a long time ago. But, you know, the point is, there's an understanding built into there that there will be times where circumstances are great and times where circumstances are messy. But love can be the constant through that. Joy can be the constant through that. Not that you don't have bad days, but your bad days are because you're caught up. Your bad days aren't because of circumstances. Your bad days are because when you think a lot of bad thoughts, you have a bad day. When you're disconnected from the flow, you feel disconnected. When you're caught up, you feel caught up, and then you wake back up to your nature. You wake back up to the spirit within. You wake back up to your twinkle, and you twinkle your way through whatever's going on, and then you get caught up again, but then you come back. That's the journey. That's the game. And it doesn't mean that you can't go out and create cool circumstances. Sometimes you can. A lot of the time you can. But you know what you're going to find when you've got really cool circumstances? You still have good days and bad days. I did a podcast about this. If you guys haven't listened, I do a podcast at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, called Caffeine for the Soul. You can find it on iTunes, Caffeine for the Soul, or at michaelneal.org/podcast. You can find some of the most recent ones. And I did one. It was called Do Enlightened People Have Bad Days? And it came out of a conversation that I had with a few clients, you know, who were trying to understand, well, are you saying that, you know, when you say that it's inside out, that we live in an inside out experience of life, that, you know, I wouldn't be happier if I was rich than poor? And the question that occurred to me asked is, well, do rich people have bad days? Well, yeah, of course they do. Do poor people have good days? Of course they do. Right? Do sick people have good days? Yeah, they do. Do healthy people have bad days? Of course they do. Do successful people have bad days? All the time. Do unsuccessful people have good days? All the time. We know intuitively that it isn't circumstance. And the reason I thought the question, do enlightened people have bad days, was an interesting one, is because that becomes almost for those of us who kind of have a spiritual bent, that becomes the final escape attempt, right? Okay, if I can't escape the human condition, which is good days and bad days, if I can't escape that through money, and I can't escape that through fame, and I can't escape that through being married to a wonderful person, and I can't escape that through having children, and I can't escape that through staying healthy. Maybe I can escape the human condition by getting enlightened. And so we attempt to get spiritual as a kind of a get out of life free card. But it doesn't work that way. Because it turns out enlightened people have bad days too. It's just, from what I can tell, they're not that identified with the bit of us that feels good and bad about things. It's experience without an experiencer. So we got some time. So if you want to get in, I'm up for one or two more if they're out there. If you've got anything you want to either, again, we can use it as a share about Louise and your experience of Louise Hay, or just if you've got more questions, 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S. 001-760-918-4300. I want to tell you about a couple more programs. I mentioned the obstacle course, michaelneal.org/obstacle. We've got a couple other courses. We've got a course starting next Tuesday. So Tuesday, the 5th of September. And that is called Falling in Love with Your Business. And that's, of course, I'm co-leading an online course with George Pransky, Dr. George Pransky, who's been a guest on the show. Somebody was talking about him earlier. One of my favorite people to teach with and learn from. And the reason that we decided to put together a program called Falling in Love with Your Business is because most people their relationship with business is, well, I like this bit. I don't like this bit. I want to get rid of this bit. I want to not have to do this bit. I want to get through this bit. And so they have a very love-hate relationship with their own business. And of course, that comes across in the business, that any part of the business that you don't love becomes the most, it becomes the problem bit of the business. And when you can learn to enjoy all of it, when you can learn to love all of it, when you can learn to love sales and promotion as much as you love what it is that you offer your clients, when you can learn to love your clients as much as you love doing the work, when you can learn to love the people you're working with as much as the people you're working for, all boats rise with that tide, that sort of unconditional appreciation and joy that you can take in what you do transforms your business, and it allows you to do everything you do better. And when you're doing everything you do better, all boats rise with that tide and business gets better. So if you're interested in that, if you're a solopreneur, if you're somebody in coaching or the helping professions, in which, you know, a service industry, if you have a company of your own, it's just going to be an amazing 12-week adventure. So, it would be awesome if I actually knew how you could find out about that. I think if you go to michaelneal.org/business, you'll find that program, a link to that program. I hope I'm right. If not, you can try typing Falling in Love with Your Business, Michael Neal, George Bransky, and you might find it that way. Let's go to Australia and let's talk to Susan. Susan, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hi, Michael. Lovely to speak to you.
And you.
Look, Michael, I was just, it's actually only 5:40 in the morning in Australia, and I woke up a bit early, so I popped on Hay House and I heard you speaking, and it was a lovely way to wake up. But
nice.
I was thinking about Kylie Minogue when she had breast cancer, and she said a beautiful thing. She said that she was in Paris and she was getting her treatment, but when she looked out over the whole city of Paris, she saw all the lights twinkling, and it was as if they were twinkling just for her. And you were talking about good days and bad days. Obviously, that's a pretty bad day when you're getting treated for breast cancer. You don't feel great, and you're having a pretty tough time. But she managed to see in that moment the beauty of it all and see the support from her whole environment. And I think that's a really good example. And it's kind of, for some reason, I was thinking about it this week. And then with what you said, I thought, you know, if you're in a tough time, if you manage to get those little windows where you manage to see the beauty in it, irrespective, I think that's a real gift.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think actually it's not so much that you put them in as that you allow them. I was doing a coaching session with somebody the other day whose mother was really struggling with Alzheimer's, and you know, had a lot of concerns about that, and was upset, but also so that we there were a lot of tears in the session, but actually there was a lot of laughter as well, and it was being done as part of a demonstration for a group. And afterwards, somebody in the group said, "Oh, I really, really appreciated the way you inserted humor into that conversation." And I said, "I didn't insert humor. I allowed it." Beauty is everywhere, and sometimes we won't let it in. Sometimes we pull down the shades and 'cause we don't want to see the light. But if we let the shades spring back up, if we let the light in, the light's already there. And it's there when we've got cancer, and it's there when we're healthy. It's there when we're doing well, and it's there when we're struggling.
I think for me, the times that I find it more difficult, ironically, are when I'm dealing with people I find extremely difficult. So when I'm dealing with someone maybe that you would define as a narcissist, sometimes, I know I won't mention names, but some people in politics that you find extremely dominant and fairly narcissistic, and I can get dismayed at their power and their influence to destroy or distress other people's lives. And I think I'm starting to learn that in God's big plan that even these people are at God's or the universe's service. You just don't know how they're working. Sometimes they're there to kind of expose the subconscious side that we've suppressed, and, you know, maybe our hate and our anger, and to let us see how it plays out. But even some of their lunatic behaviours can sometimes end up working for you in the long run. But, yeah, I think that one I've been struggling with this year, to be honest, trying to see the light. And I'm dealing with very difficult people. Sometimes I go more into fear. Do you have any advice about that, Michael?
Well, I suppose it would come under the category of advice, though I don't necessarily think of it that way. It's a recognition that our experience, I'm going to go back to this because it's the name of the show, Living from the Inside Out. Our experience is never an experience of other people.
Yes. Yes.
We're experiencing our own, as you say, fears and insecurities and love and wisdom to varying degrees. And when we're experiencing our love and wisdom, we do see them with that global perspective of there have always been despots and dictators. There have always been power-hungry people who seize external power in the world through force. And there have always been good and wise leaders who do their best to spread. And sometimes those leaders are in positions of leadership and sometimes they're not. And sometimes those despots are in positions of leadership and sometimes they're not.
Yes, yes.
And when we're feeling scared and insecure, we see that around us. And one of my favorite Sid Banks quotes that I'm going to misquote now, having just said it's one of my favorites, he talks about how when we can feel what we feel and not project it onto something outside of ourselves, even when we're feeling bad, we're mentally healthy.
Yes, yes.
But when we're feeling what we're feeling and we're projecting it onto something outside of ourselves as though that thing were causing the feeling in us, even if we're feeling good, we're mentally unhealthy in that moment.
Yeah. And I think that, like, that's very helpful. And it just means that when you're watching the news and you're watching what's going on in the world, it kind of gives you a bit of an anchor, because sometimes you watch it and it's easy to be taken away a little bit and find yourself on a ride that you didn't meant to be on.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think the knowing that, look, we're going to get caught up from time to time, but we always find our way back home,
yes,
makes it less scary to get caught up.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Michael. Lovely to speak to you.
Thank you, Susan. Good morning.
Bye.
Bye. You know, that's you know, kind of a nice way for us to bring the show to close. It's been a good show. We've been around the world. We've been to Switzerland. We've been to Australia. We've been to Georgia. We, you know, been to Vancouver. One of the things that I find wonderful about the Inside Out understanding is that the world just looks more interesting. It tends to look less scary, less in need of fixing, and more a grand adventure that I get to be part of for a time, and to do what I know to do, to exert what influence I have, to see if I can make the changes, you know, the shapes change on the outside, knowing that the whole thing's being created through the mind on the inside. One last program I want to tell you. I've been talking about the, so we talked about the obstacle course, michaelneal.org/obstacle. We talked about the falling in love with your business, michaelneal.org/business, I think. One other course I just want to mention that I'm just really excited about is going to be in Dubai in December. It's called Living a Guided Life. It's one of my favorite courses. It's a 5-day retreat. It's going to be at a beautiful, beautiful hotel in Dubai, and you can read more about that at michaelneal.org/guided life. I hope you've enjoyed the show. We're going to be back live. Actually, we're going to be back live for a long time. So till next week, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.